We're excited for tonight's episode of Inspire Excellence. This podcast will feature Dr. Jim Torres. He's an emergency room doctor who practices in Sun Valley, Idaho at St. Luke's Hospital. As you know, Blaine County has the highest number per capita of residents that have COVID-19 in the country. As an emergency room doctor there, he's been dealing with things on the front lines, and he has a lot of great counsel for all of us to listen to tonight. I was able to work with Jim for years in the emergency room. He was one of my ER partners. He's one of the greatest doctors I've been around. He's super intelligent and smart and always on the cutting edge. We're lucky to have him serving the people here of Idaho, and excited for you to listen to him tonight.
You're listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Troy McClain and Tommy Allquist. Each episode is focused on shedding new light on different perspectives to create dialogue that inspires excellence.
Well, hey, this is great, buddy, to get caught up. I can't wait to just hear how you're doing. And, you know, I think the article that you sent me that I'd already seen this morning came out from the newspaper there in Sun Valley, saying that per capita, Blaine County is higher than anywhere else in the country with COVID-19.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You know, this whole thing started about a month ago, and we didn't recognize how prevalent it was. And so we were seeing, you know, this is a flu, is this some other respiratory virus, or just, you know, viral syndrome in general. So we had a lot of exposure at the beginning. And as a result of that, we lost over half of our staff in regards to exposures. And some physicians and nurses and what have you have developed the disease. So we have about 6.5 doctors in regards to how many workers we have, and we lost 5 of them at one point. So we were having to recruit people from Boise and Jerome and Magic Valley to help out in regards to the ED, which looks like a movie set. Everyone's dressed in personal protective equipment and everything sort of roped off. The hospital is closed, except for the ED, except for the emergency department. And fortunately, we have that tent outside that's screening people, because we could easily get overwhelmed with all these 6 patients on top of the ones who are worried, who don't really need to be in the ER. And the tent where they're doing the testing out there and screening patients has really made a big difference. So that's one of the key take-home points, is those tents outside the facilities make all the difference in regards to not seeing everybody else that's worried about whether or not they have it, who don't really need to be in the ED because they're not sick.
Let me ask you a couple questions. So, you know, if I had to think about Jim Torres, one of the best guys I know, but secondly, Jim, about you, is you're one of the smartest physicians. I mean, I'm not just saying that. I mean, you think about all the stroke care, everything you did, you always led our group. You were always on the cutting edge of what's going on with research, what's going on with where we should be with our practice patterns. How can we be cutting edge in everything we do? So one of the things I've been dying to ask you is, because I know you, that's the Jim Torres I know and love, you knew this virus was coming. What were some of the mistakes you think we made? Not trying to pass blame here on anybody, but how did we miss this so greatly early on?
I think it's multiple factors. One is it came on very quickly. I mean, really quickly, where I am in the Sun Valley area. And so we saw a lot of cases right up front. It was hard to recognize the cases because not everybody comes in with a classic shortness of breath and fever. We had a lot of cases who just had GI symptoms. They had vomiting or diarrhea with a very minor cough. So you can't say, oh, this patient has it, this patient doesn't, based on their symptoms or how they look. So one is atypical cases where they come in with situations where you wouldn't think they would have it. In other words, they're not having respiratory symptoms or fever. And two, there's a lot of well people out there who now have been exposed, who are giving it to other people. So the numbers have just multiplied because of that, and because of the fact that it takes 10 days in some cases to get the test back. So these people are running around who have it, but they don't know they have it because we haven't notified them yet, and they're giving it to other people. And so it's really been a community-wide problem, which is now being taken seriously in regards to the fact that people are staying at home and avoiding other people, which is the only way we're going to stop this.
So let me ask you this. So I've been watching it from afar. As you know, I don't practice now, but with Salter Health that we own, we're very involved every day still, even though I'm not actually caring for patients. And one of my frustrations that has been through the roof is the testing part of this. I mean, I just, it caught us completely flat-footed So talk to me a little bit about that. And just for people out there that may be listening, how different could it have been if we would have had adequate testing early on?
Well, I would say this, things are evolving very rapidly. We're going to get a rapid test, you know, probably within the next couple of weeks. That's going to be a big game changer. We didn't have a test set up for this initially, so we're very limited in regards to who we could test initially. There was very strict guidelines on who you could test and who you couldn't, which was a setback. You need to be very liberal with testing. You shouldn't say, well, I think that's my opinion, and that's been my practice, and I've had a lot of patients who have had positive tests who had pretty minor symptoms. So it's important to identify patients who have it, whether or not they have minor symptoms or significant symptoms, because we want to know who has it and who's spreading it and who needs to be quarantined. So that was one of the big things, is that very restrictive testing, and that's loosened up now. And the turnaround time was anywhere between 5 and 10 days, and even longer at this point with the private companies. And again, these people are running around with disease. They, in other words, they have the coronavirus, but they're not being notified in a timely fashion to take the protective actions that need to be taking place. So that definitely set us back. I think we're catching up now. We've definitely learned a lot. Whereas 3 weeks ago, I had to think about, you know, and try to figure out who has it. Now I can just look at patients, look at their vital signs and say, 90%, they probably have it. And after doing an x-ray and some laboratories, which do show a typical pattern, we can identify them quickly and get them admitted or send them home, depending upon their status in regards to their oxygen levels and vital signs and what have you. So the typical pattern would be an x-ray which shows this ground glass sort of foggy kind of pattern on the chest x-ray diffusely. Low sodium is oftentimes seen. And mild elevation of the liver function tests are pretty typical with a low white count, not a high white count. You don't see white counts of 20,000, 15,000, you see low white counts and plus or minus elevated lactates. So that's the typical workup we do, and that's typically what we find. And if somebody's elderly and they have a low oxygen level, in other words, they're hypoxic, then they need to be admitted. And a lot of these people go south very quickly. So we've seen patients, obviously repeat patients, 3 days ago, normal x-ray, good oxygen level. 3 days later, they have a white out of their lungs, they're hypoxic, they're really sick. So this thing can really take hold and be very aggressive in a short time frame.
Jim, that's awesome. I'm dying to ask you a few more follow-ups on that, if I could. So what I just heard from you, though, for everyone listening out there is we do need to get testing early for people, even though they may not have severe symptoms, just so you know, and you can quarantine and watch for what's going on and protect yourself. So hopefully I agree with you. I just pray that the testing becomes more available, because I think that's been we have had one hand or two hands tied behind our backs the entire time on the front lines because of that lack of testing. But secondly, those presenting symptoms, what you just went through. So tell us a little bit. One of the questions I've had all along, well, isn't this just the flu? Isn't this just the flu? This is just the flu. And just from what I'm reading and seeing and talking to some of the other docs I know, it's not just the flu. It's very different. Tell us how it's different than the flu, even H1N1, when we were together in the ER back in that day. Tell us how this is different for people out there that are listening.
Absolutely. So it is similar to the flu in the fact that you have fever, body aches, weakness, cough. But in this situation, you don't have a productive cough. So you have a dry cough. And this virus is much more aggressive than influenza, the flu, in that it can cause a lot of lung problems quickly. In other words, you have the virus in your lungs plus the inflammatory reaction from your body that's trying to clear out that virus in your lungs, which is causing a lot of debris and fluid to develop in there. And it can happen very quickly, resulting in a low oxygen level and really, really sick people who sometimes need to be intubated and put on ventilators. And that seems to be the limiting factor with some of these sick patients in these big cities, in that there's not enough ventilators. So it's very aggressive. It's very contagious. It's much more contagious than the flu. We saw a lot of flu this winter, and thank God this didn't happen during the winter, because it would have been very hard to differentiate the two, at least initially. But it's much more aggressive and much more contagious. And as you've heard, and everyone's heard millions of times, if you stay away from other people and you wash your hands a lot, those are the two most important things to do to try to prevent it.
Yeah, and so keep going on that one for me. One of the it's a frustration of mine just because I've been sitting back for a few weeks watching people not take this seriously, knowing that it's coming. You're sitting in an area that's got super concentration of positive patients right now. So clearly people are taking it seriously now, right now. You know, just last night I got texts from two or three of my friends who had gone to do takeout with restaurants, and they're in areas where people are everywhere and they're congregating and they're still. So can you emphasize for listeners how important it is today, on this Sunday when we're talking, to take it seriously in Ada County, Canyon County, some of these places that haven't been hit hard? Talk to us what flattening the curve means from your perspective on the front lines.
Well, what I'm seeing is very scary in our emergency department, and that is volumes of patients who are very ill, who we've had to admit, last week I admitted 4 patients in 1 hour. And we're filling up the beds in Magic Valley, Twin Falls. And if you can imagine, they get their own cases, and Boise gets their own cases, filling up the ICUs with sick patients. Then we're, you know, potentially could run out of beds. We could run out of ICU beds, could run out of ventilators, and then we can get into the crisis mode where, you know, New York City is and some of these other big cities. It could happen here. So it absolutely is a very, very serious situation that has to be taken seriously, because if we don't avoid contacting other people, then we're not going to stop this thing. Because as I mentioned, and I want to reemphasize, you can look really well and have this virus and be giving it to other people who aren't going to do so well, especially the elderly and people who have some underlying medical problems. And there it goes. You give it to one person, that person gives it to another person, and so on and so on and so on. And that's what happened here in our town. And it's too contagious and too aggressive to take lightly. You have to stay away from other people. That's the bottom line. You're not going to get it from takeout food. Just to jump off here, you're not going to get it from the plastic bag that comes from the takeout food restaurant. Just if you wash your hands, you're safe in regards to food. That's not how you're going to get it. It's person to person. That's the problem. Yeah. People congregating, people being around each other, that's how you're going to get it.
That's great. Hey, can we shift a little bit? And I don't know the answer to this question, but Jim, I've worked with you for a long time in the ER, and I know how much of all, when I think of Jim Torres, I think of a guy that just loves people and loves families and took really, really, really good care of people. Tell us how you're doing. Tell us the strain it is on you. And if you could, just share with us a little bit. I know one of the things that's hard for an ER doc to do is because you put your armor on, right? And you go in and you just are, hey, I'm built, I'm wired to just do this thing. But take that off for a minute and just tell me a little bit how it's been for you watching this happen and what the human element on this for you.
Well, I think everyone's realized life has changed very quickly. And, you know, I keep myself isolated as well aside from going to the ED. And, you know, whether it be going to the, driving through town or going to the grocery store or whatever, you know, things are pretty, very much changed in regard to the fact that you don't see many people around here anyway, which is good. We as emergency physicians are trained to do this kind of work. So I'm, not in a good way, but I'm excited about helping. We've always had a sense of purpose, as emergency physicians. But now we have an even more intense sense of purpose because these people are really sick. And it's affecting families, and it's sad on many levels. We don't let visitors in because we don't want them to get sick. So you have this patient who's ill, who could potentially die, we're not letting family come in to see them. So it's pretty heartfelt in regards to, you know, the individual stories. Life has changed, and it's unbelievable how fast it's changed. And for me personally, you know, my kids are being isolated away from me, and I'm isolating myself from people in general. And I think people are really being, for the most part, compliant with that, which is very important.
I know you're taking that in stride a little bit, but how has it been being away from your kids? And when do you see an end to that?
Yeah, it's double-edged in that I'm happy they're being safe. They're, you know, hanging out in Boise, which is good right now. And yeah, I miss them, definitely miss them. But I've also noticed that some of these kids, you know, to be on the bright side a little bit, are starting to get some hobbies, which they would have never developed unless we had this situation. You know, they're on their phone constantly, and as everybody knows, just looking at that thing and just driving parents crazy. But I've noticed my kids are starting to get into some hobbies, which has been refreshing. I don't think they would have ever done it without having to be cooped up. So that's been a good thing. That's been a good thing.
That's great.
Yeah, but I've just been shocked, again, how many people could have, you know, that several people could have very mild symptoms and still have it. So as an example, we had a patient the other day who had a fall and had an orthopedic injury, no symptoms whatsoever in regards to viral kind of stuff, you know, flu kind of stuff or corona kind of stuff. And we did an x-ray on that person because they needed surgery, and there it is, coronavirus on the x-ray. We can recognize it now because we see it all the time now. And that was it, for sure. He had it, and he didn't have any symptoms at all. He came in for an unrelated problem.
Wow. So think that's scary. So no symptoms, came in for something totally different, got a chest x-ray for a completely different reason. You say, hey, there's that ground glass appearance on x-ray. You have coronavirus, you test them, they're positive. I mean, I think that's powerful to get out there of hey, you don't have to be sick, you know, because hey, stay at home if you're sick, but this social isolation is real if we're going to flatten this curve.
So you don't have to be too sick, telltale sign, but it doesn't, you know, it's not obviously not the only test we do, but if you lose your sense of smell and or taste, that has been definitely, that's not a myth, that's true. About, you know, 1/3 to half of patients will lose their sense of smell and or taste, and it's real.
Wow.
The virus, for whatever reason, hits those areas and takes those factors out that hopefully will come. I've heard that it does come back.
So is that something you're asking when you go in a patient's room now? Is that part of your initial history of present illness?
People would tell us initially, we'd be like, what does that mean? You know, I don't really care that you can't smell. But it turns out that that is correlated with coronavirus. I mean, you can't smell anything. Nothing. But it really knocks it out, so it's not subtle. So just a clue anyway. But I have heard that if you do get it, and even, you know, mild or severe, that you do develop antibodies, and you do develop some protection against getting it again, at least for the short term. We don't know what the long term looks like. But you do get some immunity with being exposed. So that's one good thing. So you're not likely to get it twice.
Tell me about the morale of so for people that are listening, they may not know this, but one of the things I miss about being in the emergency room, Jim, is business is great, but that teamwork, that family, I mean, your ER staff, the nurses, the caps, the clerks, the x-ray techs, the lab techs, you really become a team. And you develop a reliance because it's not just you, right? You walk into the room, you depend on every single person on your team to save someone's life. And so I think that teamwork that you feel in the emergency room, it's something special. You don't feel it in other places in life. And you feel, I mean, I think through the years when someone in on our team got cancer or got sick or were going through something in their personal life, how is the ER team up there doing? Tell us a little bit about how people are handling this.
Sure. Yeah, it is a team, and you definitely rely on everybody. It's not just one person. And the teamwork has been fantastic. People have really rallied. They're passionate. It's a renewal of the passion that we've always had, but, you know, really, people have really rallied at this point. And, you know, I just see fantastic cooperation. When we see a patient, our workup is pretty standard now, labs, x-rays, blood cultures, and what have you, and they get done quickly. We make decisions quickly, and because we need to. We can't have the ED, getting clogged up, for the lack of better description, with patients. We have to move patients either in or out. And so I've seen great collaboration. People have rallied, have great attitudes. And so it's been very refreshing. And I have to say, St. Luke's has really come to the plate. They've given us manpower. They've given us that tent, which is key outside, with physicians outside screening patients and doing the testing as well. And it's been a real, very positive situation in regards to how we're responding.
Yeah, we're one of the things that we're very blessed on in this community is having St. Luke's and St. Al's, I think two great systems that are doing everything, coordinating, planning in every way they can to help this, because the brunt of this does hit ICUs and these health systems really, really hard. So I'm glad you brought that up. Let me ask you one other question before I go into something else. What about one of the things that I can only imagine, having lived your life, is that you've got now a percentage of your ER staff team kind of down and being quarantined with the virus that have tested positive. And I've heard different numbers, and you don't need to quote it. I don't know that you want to, but what percentage is kind of ill with the virus? But do you worry, Jim, how sustainable this is? I mean, you've been kind of in the trenches, front lines, living kind of this new reality for a couple weeks, really? Talk to me about the sustainability of this thing.
Learned so much. Well, the sustainability is currently good. In other words, we're transporting patients quickly out of there. We have ambulances at the ready to transport patients, and helicopters as well. But my concern, as I mentioned before, is if the ICUs in Twin and Boise get filled up with patients from Twin and Boise, then we're going to have a big problem. That's going to be a big problem. So it's sustainable for the moment. I hope it slows down in regards to the number of cases we're seeing, and the fact that people are taking this seriously, so we flatten the curve. But if we don't, then nobody knows when it's going to end, and nobody knows, when we'll see the daylight on the situation. But as I mentioned before, it's very contagious, so it could, it would be a nightmare if Twin and Boise start getting the number of cases that we're getting, and because there's a lot more people there, a lot more people who could be exposed and who could become ill, and that would be a disaster.
Yeah. So the point there for people listening, I know you've said it a few times, but what we've been trying to say, and at least get out through our communication channels, the nightmare is once you run out of beds, because one of the things you've had, as bad as it's been in Blaine County, you have great, state-of-the-art emergency medicine treatment, which means you have people coming in, getting diagnosed, getting stabilized, getting treated, even if that's intubation, but then you're shipping them off very quickly. The hospital's essentially closed down, right? To Twin Falls, which has some capacity, and then to Boise, which has some capacity. That's currently your pop-off valve that's allowing you to survive the way you are. The point is, in Idaho, we only have so many beds, we only have so many ventilators, and I've tried to tell people too, respiratory illness is one of the most labor-intensive illnesses, right? There's a lot of things we treat, Jim, but when you come in and you need even a nebulizer treatment and respiratory therapy and everything, it's very labor intensive. And then if you get intubated, it's a ventilator, it's ICU. So the fact that this virus in particular attacks our lungs and causes such severe changes to the lungs and requirements for oxygen and treatment, that's a problem. And I think that's the reason anyone listening to this that's not ill, even if they don't have comorbidities or friends or family that do, please stay away, just to protect the community. And I think that's the major message to get out there, don't you?
Absolutely. And, it could happen. These people do not come out of the ICU quickly. I've heard anywhere from closer to 10 days before they recover, and you can recover, but, it's a labor-intensive situation, as you said. It's not a short-term ICU stay. And so you can imagine those beds could get used up and filled up, and that's going to be, that would be the problem when we run out of beds at that level.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, and I think we've hit it a few times. I know you're trained to be tough and not get into this, and I know with patient confidentiality you can't share a lot of stories, but tell us a little bit more of the human element. How tough has it been for some of the families, loved ones, those that you've treated up in Sun Valley?
Well, it's very tough because these people are very sick, and some of them are elderly, so they have very caring families who want to be by their side. And what's heartbreaking is that we can't let them in the ED and get exposed and bring that out to the community again. So we're not allowing visitors per se. And so that's heartbreaking when you see somebody's very ill and they're scared and they don't have any family member next to them to comfort them and talk to them and what have you. So got to be creative. You use FaceTime, you use telephones, and allow them to talk to their family that way and interact with their family that way. But it's very heartbreaking. I mean, some of these people are so ill, that they're probably not going to do well. They could die. So it's a very serious disease. And we don't have any definitive treatments yet. I know people have talked about hydroxychloroquine, which is the malaria drug, and Z-Pak for some patients. And, you know, that sort of took a life of its own because of a small study done in France. But the experts in the U.S. are using it for very sick patients, but nobody knows if it really works yet. We'll know soon. But there's a lot of, rumor or what have you that, you know, this is what you got to have, but no one knows if it works yet. So we're going to learn a lot very quickly. People are being very aggressive in regards to figuring out what works and what doesn't work, but we don't have the definitive answer yet. So I know that that's been out there in the press as well a lot. And we do use it for some patients who are really ill, but we're not handing it out to everybody who comes to the ED. So I don't think people should be looking for that yet until we prove that it's safe and that it works.
That's great.
Well, this has been fantastic. I think people are just dying to hear what's going on in the trenches. And I really appreciate you in the middle of, you know, you're doing, I don't know, Jim, you always worked harder than almost anyone in our group, but you know, I know you're doing these big shifts all the time, and to take just a little bit of time to get some of this information out, I really appreciate it. I love you, buddy. And I pray for you, and I want you to be safe and your family safe. And, you know, I was talking to Mikey Ross, who was up there. Mike was doing a shift. He came back. I know he covered a little bit, and he just said it's just hard right now. So praying for all you guys. I love you, man. And I just, thanks for taking some time. I think this has been incredibly informative for people. I'll stay in close touch with you and let me know if there's anything I can do for you.
Please do. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, bud. Okay. We'll see you.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast. We invite you to find something that inspires you this week. Join us again for our next episode.